Okay, so do you want to start by introducing yourself to people who don't recognize your voice from listening to your show?
Sure. This is David Barsamian of Alternative Radio, a weekly one-hour program which you can hear on KYRS in Spokane on Mondays from 9 to 10 a.m. And it's wonderful to be back on the station. I'll soon be in Spokane to speak for KYRS on Tuesday, April 16th.
I will post all those details. It's going to be 7 p.m. Tuesday the 16th. It's $5 for students and $10 general admission. So, so you've been at Alternative Radio for some time, for decades now, and you started Alternative Radio. Is that correct?
Yeah, I was very unhappy with the corporate controlled media. When I got started, there were 50 corporations that dominated most of the media. Today, that number is down to 5. And how dangerous is that for the communication needs of a democratic society? The answer is significantly dangerous, because 90% of our fellow citizens get what they learn about the news from these 5 big mega corporations. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to create an alternative, something that challenges the kind of hegemonic thinking and, you know, embedded assumptions that are so rampant in political and social discourse. So that's why I began Alternative Radio, and my very first person was Noam Chomsky, who at that time was totally ignored and nowhere to be found, actually, even in the left-of-center media. And so I began with him and then added Howard Zinn and Vandana Shiva and Arundhati Roy and so many other great independent voices.
Mm-hmm. And something that's interesting to me about what you did in the beginning and what you still do with Alternative Radio is there was also an alternative in terms of format, because that first interview with Noam Chomsky was something like 2 hours long, right?
I know. It was a huge blunder on my part. No one told me that most stations are set up to take half-hour and one-hour segments.
Mm-hmm.
And so the very first program I fed through the satellite system was, in fact, 2.5 hours of Chomsky. But fortunately, a couple of stations did pick it up, and it created quite a stir.
Mm-hmm.
And that launched Alternative Radio. And since then, I've probably done more interviews with Chomsky than anyone else. If there were a Guinness Book of Records category, I would probably be at the top there.
Good. Yeah, but you kept the long form and the depth of the interviews, especially and speeches that you broadcast. It's generally
your 4-hour. That was certainly and remains its distinctive feature, that a speaker or an independent voice gets a full hour to expound and explicate what their perspectives and views are on important public issues. And that's harder and harder to find in the media, which has gone, you know, just soundbite crazy, 6 seconds, 8 seconds, and on to the next item. You know, it's like keeping up with the Kardashians.
Yeah, and a lot of the content is reading tweets, right? But rebroadcasting what various people have tweeted in minutes.
The commander-in-chief or the commander-in-tweets, you know, dominates the news with these little messages that he pings out in a very haphazard fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And the corporate media, of course, pick up and just repeat that over and over again. And so the tweeter-in-chief dominates the news.
Yeah. So I guess I'm curious, you were already upset with the corporate media those decades ago when you started. I assume that you're still upset. It's consolidated
even
more.
Well, it's doing an by any measure, it's doing an appalling job,
mm-hmm,
of not informing the people about the real issues that are going on.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that it's decreased in quality over these past decades, and can you kind of trace the way that the mainstream media, the corporate media, however you'd like to say it, has shifted And then maybe also how alternatives have shifted to meet the gap that they've left behind.
Well, I think it becomes palpable during the Nixon administration in the late 60s and early 70s, where the kind of language that is being used now to describe journalists and the media as the enemy of the American people was being introduced in that period by Nixon. And it certainly has accelerated since then as there has been more and more concentration of media in the hands of a few. That has resulted in an enormous cutback on foreign reporting. Foreign bureaus have virtually closed. What we have now is what I call fly-by journalism. Journalists are parachuted into Beirut or Istanbul or Tehran, and usually there's a mosque in the background and you can hear the sound of the Islamic call to prayer. And then there's some very conventional, stereotypical comments from the journalist, and then the next day he or she is gone. You know, I'm thinking of someone like Martha Raddatz, right? Mm-hmm. She's the chief global affairs correspondent of ABC News. She frequently appears on the World News Tonight with David Muir. And she's, you know, doesn't speak Arabic. You know, maybe she can say hummus and falafel and tabbouleh and, you know, pita and a few other words. She flies into these, you know, trouble spots in U.S. military helicopters with high-ranking officers telling her what's going on the ground below. And this is just, you know, stenography. This is not journalism. She's not getting any dirt under her fingernails. She's not challenging the hegemonic tropes that are so prevalent in the media. So the corporatization, which started, you know, in the Nixon period in the late 60s, early 70s, has just accelerated. And we need now independent outlets like KYRS in Spokane, like Alternative Radio, like Democracy Now! And other programs that, you know, get to the nitty-gritty and inform people on the vital issues, you know, facing the country and facing the planet right now. I mean, you know, the great commander in chief recently declared an emergency in the United States. Well, you know, there is no emergency. That's totally manufactured, the so-called crisis on the southern border. But there is a major emergency, and that's the destruction of the earth because of climate disruption. There has been, you know, more and more of these killer hurricanes and tornadoes mm-hmm. and floods and droughts. And you mm-hmm. have, you know, they not only occur with greater frequency, but their duration has been extended. So that's the planetary emergency that we're facing. And we have a regime in Washington that is in total denial that climate disruption is happening. The commander in tweets, you know, calls it a Chinese hoax. Mm-hmm. He said that he's a genius and that he knows a lot about science, and there's no such thing as climate change. Well, you know, all the evidence contradicts that very outrageous, audacious statement. Mm-hmm.
So with all of that, I mean, there's more real stuff to report on. There's no shortage of stories to tell. So what would you tell people, you know, people maybe who are either frustrated with where they're at trying to do journalism, maybe they've been disaffected, or people who are thinking like, wow, I think I'd like to go do some of this and do some of this type of work, but I don't want to work for the corporate machine. What advice would you have, having started your own media outlet and then seen it grow and kind of become an institution over all these years? What would you tell people now who want to tell those stories?
Yes. Well, I would say, first of all, community radio is an enormously rich vein of information and independence. So KYRS in Spokane is a perfect example of that. WMNF in Tampa, KGNU here in Boulder, where I started, the Pacifica Network, WRT in Madison, KRCL in Salt Lake City, KVNF in Paonia. All over the country, there's a network of independent community-based radio stations. So that is to be encouraged and people should get involved, as you are involved in KYRS. There are also new things that have come up in the last few years. I'm thinking specifically of The Intercept, which was founded by Glenn Greenwald. Mm-hmm. And there are such independent journalists there as Greenwald himself, Jeremy Scahill, Liliana Segura, Laura Poitras, Murtaza Hussein, Mehdi Hassan, and many others. There's Matt Taibbi at Rolling Stone magazine and other journalists there. Arlie Hochschild writes for Rolling Stone, as does Adam Hochschild. Great journalists. So there's, you have to look, you know, nothing will come to you on a platter. You have to go out there and find a niche, find something where you feel authentic and comfortable, and then embrace it, get involved. There's a lot of, throughout the country, there's a whole network of community-based TV stations. They are growing and expanding. So, again, it's not going to be easy, but if you search, if you look for alternatives, you'll find them.
Yeah, and so if people are unfamiliar with your show, they can kind of browse the whole catalog at alternativeradio.org and see just the, I mean, it's an impressive list of kind of thinkers and heavy-hitting people who you've interviewed over the years. What would you say?
Let me just say about that. One of the things I'm most proud of is getting voices on the air that you wouldn't expect, even from a left-of-center outlet. So, of course, you expect Noam Chomsky and Ralph Nader and Chris Hedges and people like that. But I'm just looking at recent programs. These names are virtually unknown, but they have very important things to say, like Leilani Farha. She's a Canadian-Iranian talking about housing. There's L.A. Kaufman and Anila Afzali, two women talking about the power of protest. There's Dar Jamil on climate disruption. There's Shoshana Zuboff on surveillance capitalism. Ilan Pape on Palestine. Dana Frank on Honduras. So every week there's a new voice coming out through alternative radio, and people can find out more about it by going to that website, alternativeradio.org. Mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about getting these voices that are not so prominent, even in left of center circles, out into the mainstream airwaves.
Mm-hmm. And what would you say? I mean, you're covering topics all over the map. Would you say there's like a unifying theme in who you're talking to and what kind of things you're amplifying?
I think so. And that is to challenge the hegemonic thinking, to challenge the embedded assumptions that go without ever being interrogated, like the U.S. carrying out a slow-motion coup in Venezuela. What right does the U.S. have to interfere in the internal affairs of another country that's not threatening it? The answer is zero, but it never comes up. You know, I was just watching Ali Velashi on MSNBC, sometimes called MSDNC, because it seems to be an organ of the Democratic National Committee. And he was talking to a former CIA officer, a former official in the Obama administration, talking about sanctions on Iran. Well, you know, who gave... imagine if Iran imposed sanctions on the United States, what the uproar would be. How dare they? Who do they think they are? You know, we are the beacon of democracy. We are, you know, the solace of those who are the wretched of the earth. How could Iran even dream of doing such a thing? But the fact that the U.S. does it routinely is never questioned by Ali Velashi or his guest. And I think, you know, that's the kind of thing we need to flesh out, you know, the embedded assumptions, the a priori kind of issues that are never taken apart or are never examined. I mean, you want to know how bad the corporate media are? The royal wedding in the year 2018 got three times the media coverage of the war in Yemen, a war which has resulted in the worst humanitarian disaster by the UN and independent aid agencies. Mm-hmm. Three times the coverage for the royal wedding. That tells you a lot about the priorities of the media and also their societal function of distracting people. That's why there's more information about the Kardashians and housewives in Malibu and housewives in the Hamptons and housewives in Miami Beach than there is about the economy, about, you know, how the rich are getting richer, and people are working longer and longer hours, losing benefits, and, you know, working double time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I mean, it's really hard. I'm always thinking about, you know, is that a reflection of people's level of engagement, or is people's engagement a reflection of that? And how do you think information and access to information and social movements are connected? Do you think there's a causal link, or does it feed each other?
They're absolutely critical. Social change in this country has always, without exception, come from below. It's when people organize into 350.org, when they organize into hashtag MeToo, when they organize in Code Pink, when they organize in American Friends Service Committee, and Black Lives Matter and all these other organizations, when they are screaming in the streets at the creeps in the suites, that's when change happens. And so we need to encourage these organizations. We need to engage with them, become part of them, support them in any way that we can so that they can continue to grow and expand. We're in an extremely dangerous moment in the history of the United States. I can really recall certainly nothing in my lifetime, I'm almost 74, that is in any way comparable to the crisis that we are facing, not just domestically with a pathological prevaricator sitting in the Oval Office, but also with the enormous destruction on our Mother Earth, the attack on our planet, Mother Nature under attack, being looted and plundered for the profits of a handful of corporations.
Mm-hmm. I have to ask briefly, is screaming in the streets at the creeps in the suites a David Barsamian original, or is that...
Yeah, no, it's mine.
I'm going to keep it in my back pocket, but I will be sure to cite my source if I use it again.
Well, I will definitely, you know, talk about it next week. In fact, you know, I wrote a little ditty. If you'll indulge me, I'll read it. How to build community. Okay, that's what it's called. Turn off your TV. Get off the internet. Get out of the house. Drop your tweets and get into the streets. Get off of Facebook and into the face of the powerful. The heat in the streets will melt the creeps in the suites. Stop texting. Get activated.
Nice.
That's a little, I guess you'd call it a ditty.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair description. So you said, you know, you're 74. We're at this moment now. And you've been, what year did you start alternative radio?
Well, I started community radio in 1978.
Okay.
Alternative radio formally started in 1986 when I put up that enormous 2.5 hour Noam Chomsky extravaganza.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So something I'm always wondering as someone who does this weekly, and I've been doing my show for, I took a little break, but 7 years now. And I wonder, when I watch Democracy Now!, when I listen to your show, these people like you and like Amy Goodman who do this, have been doing this for so many years, especially in times like this. I mean, things haven't really been getting better in a generalized way over those years.
Well, in that respect, I think we should, you know, heed the words of Antonio Gramsci, who I hope to speak about next week, the great Italian philosopher and radical editor. He said he had pessimism of the intellect, optimism of the will. You look at the situation as you described it, it's pretty dire. There's no two ways about it. Let's not, you know, hedge our bets. It's the planet is in a state of crisis, and we have to address that. So he said pessimism of the intellect, but optimism of the will, mm-hmm. that through organization, through solidarity, we can overcome the negative things that are so prevalent today. But it comes about when you identify kindred spirits, when you have solidarity, when you have unions and faith groups and other organizations that are out there. I've named some of them, mm-hmm. and I'm sure they exist in Spokane. Spokane is a major city in the Pacific Northwest. To get involved also is enormously, I think, therapeutic. You know, it's one thing if you just sit around and whine and complain, you know, things are bad, they're worse than bad, the end is near. That's not going to get you anywhere. That's going to sink you deeper into that, you know, quicksand. So to find and identify kindred spirits and to work with them in solidarity, that's how social change happens. And then you feel much better about yourself. Because one of the ways that power rules over us is to isolate us, is to atomize us, to get us in front of our cell phones and just keep looking in the screen and texting and forwarding messages and, you know, reading blogs, et cetera, et cetera. The time now screams out for engagement. It screams out for activism, not passive. So I'm not saying that the cynicism that a lot of people experience is not justified, but that cynicism should not lead to being passive, to being apathetic. It should lead to engagement. That's what we need, and you know, it's particularly up to the younger generation, you know, to take the lead. You know, as I said, his change in this country always comes from below, and it also always starts with younger people. So we saw just recently, starting in Sweden with a 16-year-old student, you know, went out on strike, and that was followed throughout Sweden, Scandinavia, Western Europe, parts of the United States. I mean, young people get it. Mm-hmm. Young people are attuned to the climate destruction that's going on, and they want to do something about it because it's their future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so it sounds like, at least for you personally, and I think this is true for me too, is just being engaged with the people who are driving that engagement helps from keeping things too bleak on the outlook level.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's through that kind of community and solidarity, and that's why KYRS is so important, because it's kind of an electronic umbilical cord in Spokane and the environs, because it's linking people together. You know, it's providing information and solace, not just, you know, entertaining programs, but also compassion. And that's, you know, that's so important.
Mm-hmm. So this is kind of a pivot far away from what we've been talking about, but it's something I'm curious to ask you as a journalist. With everything that's happening, particularly around, like, the global rise of fascism, the rise of white nationalism and white supremacist violence. That's something we're really focused on in this region because of our history with it, but also because of things happening now. Something I notice in the media is this idea that we need to hear from everyone and that the truth is in the middle and journalism is about quote unquote objectivity. What do you think about that? I mean, you're choosing specific people on your show, but what do you think about that mentality?
Well, I make no bones about it. You know, there's no subterfuge or camouflage. There's no stealth involved. You know, I'm providing a microphone for people who are completely cut off from corporate controlled media. And so the idea that, you know, there's any kind of objectivity, that obtains to science. So that obtains to mathematics. Mm-hmm. We can all agree 2 and 2 is 4. 10 times 10 is 100. These are not questions that need to be balanced, you know, or that can be in some way challenged. You know, either water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit or it doesn't. It's an up and down question. Now, mm-hmm. when it comes to the news reporting, this is a highly volatile area where ideology plays a very important role. So the haves, have basically squared off against the have-nots in this country, and this has been going on since the founding of the Republic, by the way, no less an authority of as James Madison, one of the founding finaglers, as I call them, one of the founding fathers, you know, who, you know, we're all supposed to venerate and be in awe of. Well, they were deeply flawed men. But Madison actually said something, you know, absolutely true. He said the function of the U.S. government, the aim of Washington is to protect the opulent minority against the majority. There is a clear declaration of class war. And no less an authority than Warren Buffett, right? You know who he is. Mm-hmm. He's the much admired genius investor of Hathaway. He's one of the world's richest men. He said, there's class warfare, all right, but it's my class, the rich class, that's making war, and we're winning. Mm-hmm. And then I ask you, who are the losers? Well, the working class, people who work for an hourly wage or a salary. Mm-hmm. The big boys are organized and funded. They've driven down wages and benefits. They've broken unions. They've slashed the social safety net. All of this at a time when income and wealth inequality has reached historic extremes. Am I going to be objective about that? Am I going to present the views of Jeff Bezos and Bill Gates and Warren Buffett as opposed to the views of the people who are being crushed under the weight of their economic policies? Of course not. That's mm-hmm. not what I intend to do, and yeah. I don't do it.
Well, good. I appreciate that example being out there because, yeah, I definitely agree. So just in these last few minutes we have, what can folks, I'll repeat again that you're coming to Spokane. If folks are just joining us, I'm talking with David Barsamian, founder and host of Alternative Radio, which you can find at alternativeradio.org. He's visiting us. We're doing an evening with David Barsamian Tuesday, April 16th, next Tuesday at 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Church. It's $10 general admission, $5 for students, and you can get tickets online at kyrs.org. David, what can people expect from that talk?
It's going to be a rip-roaring presentation, if I may say, in my humble opinion. You know, I want to ignite activism. I want to provoke people into thinking about what they can do in their community in a creative way. There's always some opening. You know, there's that great Leonard Cohen song, the Canadian singer, songwriter, poet. It's called Anthem. He says, there's always a little crack where the light gets in. And so I want to get in that space and expand it for people that are going to come to hear me speak.
That's a good pitch. If you can get Leonard Cohen into a pitch, then I'm there. So I don't know, what else would you want to leave people with who are listening today? Perhaps if they can't make it to the show.
When is enough is enough? When? How long are we going to sit by and watch what's going on passively? You know, when do we get involved? There was a couple of students at the University of Munich during the height of Nazi power in the early 1940s. They formed a movement called the White Rose, and they went out and they passed out literature criticizing Hitler and the Nazi regime. They wrote a famous graffiti on the walls of the University of Munich where they were students, and it said, every word that comes out of Hitler's mouth is a lie. Well, I can think of someone you could say that about that's sitting in the White House today, where that would be quite appropriate. Mm-hmm. These young people, and they were very young in their 20s, they were arrested by the Gestapo. They were tried and summarily guillotined, beheaded by the Nazi regime. So they took chances. They had under enormous danger. And we don't face that kind of danger. We don't have yet those kinds of threats, you know, of having a secret police arresting mm-hmm. people and then kangaroo courts sentencing them to death. They took risks. Think of, you know, throughout history. Think about in 1848 when Elizabeth Cady Stanton and a handful, five or six women, got together in Seneca Falls, New York, upstate New York, and started the women's movement. They were totally denounced they were made fun of. They were said, you're wasting your time. You know, why don't you just breed children and take care of them and cook food and mend my clothes? You know, that was a response from the from men at mm-hmm. the time. Yet they persevered, and it took a long time, but it took 80 years before women got the right to vote and had more, you know, more freedoms and more rights. So it always starts with a few people, and movements build. You know, historically, that's always been the case. So mm-hmm. whether it's the White Rose movement in Nazi Germany, whether it's the women's movement in the United States, you know, it's poco a poco, si scala la scala, as I always say. Mm-hmm. Step by step, paso a paso, you climb the staircase. Everyone wants to be at the top of the staircase, but we have to start at the bottom. Then we will reach the top. Mm-hmm. Often in my talks, I hold up an acorn. And I say kind of in an analogous way, you know, everyone wants to be a mighty oak tree. Well, this is where this mighty oak tree started, just as a simple acorn. So there's a lot of work to be done.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, we are looking forward to having you back in Spokane. And, yeah, thanks so much for talking
with me. I can't wait to be there. And I want, you know, urge everyone to come out and support Community Radio KYRS, one of the best community radio stations in the country. And I thank you very much, Taylor, for what you're doing.